Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and thank you for standing by for JinkoSolar Holdings Co., Ltd. third quarter 2021 earnings conference call. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. After management's prepared remarks, there will be a question and answer session. As a reminder, today's conference call is being recorded. I would now like to turn the meeting over to your host for today's call, to Ms. Ripple Zhang, JinkoSolar's Investor Relations Manager. Please proceed, Ripple.
Thank you, operator. Thank everyone for joining us today for JinkoSolar's third quarter 2021 earnings conference call. The company's results were released earlier today and available on the company's IR website at www.jinkosolar.com, as well as on Newswire services. We have also provided a supplemental presentation for today's earnings call, which can also be found on the IR website. On the call today from JinkoSolar are Mr. Li Xuande, Chairman of Board of Directors and Chief Executive Officer of JinkoSolar Holding Company Limited, Mr. Zhen Miao, Chief Marketing Officer of JinkoSolar Company Limited, Mr. Pan Li, Chief Financial Officer of JinkoSolar Holding Company Limited, and Mr. Charlie Cao, Chief Financial Officer of JinkoSolar Company Limited. Mr. Li will discuss JinkoSolar's business operations and company highlights, followed by Mr. Miao, who will talk about the sales and marketing, and then Mr. Pan Li, who will go through the financials. They will all be available to answer your questions during the Q&A session that follows. Please note that today's discussion will contain forward-looking statements made under the Safe Harbor provisions of the U.S. Private Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1995. Forward-looking statements involve inherent risk and uncertainties. As such, our future results may be materially different from the views expressed today. Further information regarding this and other risks is included in JinkoSolar's public filings with Securities and Exchange Commission. JinkoSolar does not assume any obligation to update any forward-looking statements except as required under the applicable law. It's now my pleasure to introduce Mr. Li Xuande, Chairman and CEO of JinkoSolar Holding. Mr. Li will speak in Mandarin, and I will translate his comments into English. Please go ahead, Mr. Li.
三季度公司总收获2.15亿瓦，营收约13.3亿美金，毛利率15.1%。总收获量受到物流运输带来的销售收入确认延迟的影响，新的电池产能释放，使得电池生产成本显著降低，部分抵消了多晶硅料和其他材料高企的价格对生产成本带来的压力。三季度至今，物流成本相较二季度进一步上升，逐渐价格创近一年的新高。但由于全球大部分区域能源转型的驱动，电价的上涨叠加融资等政策的支持，客户对逐渐价格的接受度也在提升。虽然受到诸多挑战，今年的全球装机相较年初的预期并没有显著的差异，光伏需求的韧性在逐渐增强。随着今年最短期的多晶硅料产能从明年开始逐渐走向充裕，下游装机需求将被极大的释放。
We are very pleased to have delivered total shipments of approximately 5 gigawatt, total revenues of $1.33 billion, and gross margin at 15.1%.Total shipments were impacted by the delay in sales revenue recognition caused by logistical issues and blockage. The release of new cell capacity significantly reduced cell production costs, partially offsetting the pressures on production costs inflicted by the high prices of polysilicon and other materials. Logistical costs have further increased compared with the second quarter.And module prices hit a new high in almost a year. However, due to the transition to renewable energy in most regions of the world, the increase in electricity prices, financing support, and other favorable policies, clients are more willing to accept higher module prices. Despite all the challenges, global installation this year has not differed from expectations.Set at the beginning of the year, as the resilience of solar demand is gradually increasing. Currently, in its most severe shortage, we expect polysilicon supply will gradually return to sufficient levels starting next year. and as a result, installation demand is expected to increase significantly.
由于材料价格高企，我们加快了技术降本的步伐。目前单晶硅片的厚度相较今年初减薄了 15%， 节约了镀晶硅料的用量。电子环节二季度投产的7G高效 PORC 电池产能在三季度实现满产，带动三季度的电池链生产成本环比下降超过 10%。 组件环节，公司的大尺寸的组件产品占比将在三季度达到接近 50%，相较于上半年20%的占比有显著的提升。全球光伏需求强劲，但一段时间内装机成本的上升，我们致力于不断的以技术创新和产品的竞争力为客户提供最优的解决方案。
Due to high material prices, we accelerated the pace of cost reduction with upgraded technology. At present, we have reduced the thickness of our mono wafers.By nearly 15% compared to the beginning of the year, which saves on polysilicon. In terms of sales, the 7GW high efficiency PERC capacity put into production in the second quarter finally reached full production, capacity in the third quarter, causing cell production costs in the third quarter to drop by more than 10% sequentially. The company's large size moduleProducts accounted for nearly 50% in the third quarter, a significant increase from less than 20% in the first half of the year. The global demand for solar remains strong, but installation costs are rising over a period of time. We are committed to providing customers with the best solutions based on technological innovation and product competitiveness.
光伏组件是生命周期长达20到25年的发电产品。产品的性能至关重要。近期我们的高效 N 型单晶硅单节电子效率最高达到 25.4%， 再次刷新了世界纪录。基于持续领跑的研发能力和两年的量产经验，我们正在大幅加大 N 型电子片产能的建设，预计将在2022年一季度投产 16G 的 N 型电子片产能，全年贡献约10G 的产量。这将有助于弥补公司电池产能的不足，并有望引领行业迈向更高效的 N 型产品时代。近期我们发布了全新的 N 型高效组件，最高效率可达625瓦。明年我们将加大对 N 型产品的推广和销售，实现全年出货量50%以上的增长，赢得更大的全球市场份额。
Modules are power generation products with a life cycle of 20 to 25 years, and product performance is crucial. Recently, our high-efficiency N-type monocrystalline silicon solar cell reached a maximum conversion efficiency of 25.4%, setting a world record yet again. Based on our continuous leading R&D capabilities and 2 years mass production experience,We are quickly expanding N-type cell production capacity. We are preparing for approximately 16GW of 10 N-type cell production capacity to be operational in the first quarter of 2022, contributing about 10GW output for the full year. This will help make up for the lagged cell production capacity and hopefully will lead the industry into the era of more premium and high-efficient N-type products.Recently, we launched a new series of N-type modules with maximum power output of 620 watts. Next year, we are planning to increase our global market share by enhancing our sales and promotions of N-type products and achieve at least 50% growth in annual shipments.
公司持续完善全球的产业链建设。目前我们已经和多家海外硅料签订了硅料供应的协议，并战略性入股了四川通威和内蒙古新特能源。越南7GW单晶硅片工厂将于明年一季度投产，完成后公司在海外将近拥有7GW的单晶硅片电池组件的一体化生产制造能力，完善了在全球产业链建设，既是我们在订单生产和客户交付时的更加灵活，持续地为全球的客户提供服务。
We continued to improve our global supply chain infrastructure, So far, we have signed polysilicon supply agreements with a number of overseas polysilicon manufacturers and have strategically invested in Tongwei Sichuan Yongxiang and the Inner Mongolia Xinte High Purity Polysilicon Production Project, our 7-gigawatt monocrystalline silicon wafer plant in Vietnam will commence production in the first quarter of next year. After that, we will have approximately 7 gigawatts of integrated mono wafer cell module manufacturing capacity overseas. A sound and diversified global industrial chain infrastructure will enable us to be more flexible in terms of order production and customer delivery as we continue to provide integrated services for our global customers.
话题交给Jenna之前，我来介绍一下业绩指引。 2021年第四季公司的总出货量在 7.3到8.8个吉瓦之间， 其数逐渐的出货量在 7到8.5个吉瓦之间， 营业收入在 18亿美金到22亿美金之间， 毛利率在 13%到16%之间。 到2021年底， 我们的单晶硅片电池组件的产能预计分别达到 32.5个吉瓦、 24个吉瓦和 45吉瓦。 受到美国市场出货量的减少和全球物流的影响， 我们下调了2021年全年的总出货量， 包括硅片、电池和组件在 22.8个到24.3吉瓦之间。
Before turning over to Jenner, I would like to go over our guidance for the fourth quarter of 2021. We expect total shipments to be in the range of 7.3 to 8.8 gigawatts, including module shipments to be in the range of 7 to 8.5 gigawatts for the fourth quarter of 2021. Total revenue for the fourth quarter is expected to be in the range of 1.8 billion to 2.2 billion US dollars. Gross margin for the fourth quarter is expected to be in the range of 13 to 16%. The annual mono wafer, solar cell, and solar module production capacity is expected to reach 32.5 gigawatt, 24 gigawatt, and 45 gigawatt, respectively, by the end of 2021, with impacts from less shipments to the U.S. markets and the global logistics situation. We are lowering the guidance for our full year 2021 shipments, including wafers, cells, and modules, to be in the range of 22.8 gigawatt to 24.3 gigawatt.
Thank you, Ms. Ni. Total shipments in the third quarter were 5 gigawatt, with module shipment increasing 18% sequentially to 4.7 gigawatt. In terms of module shipment by region, Europe and Asia Pacific were the main contributors, driven by China's combined goal of 30-60 and efficient energy transition. Shipments to Chinese market doubled sequentially. Shipments to the emerging markets increased significantly both year over year and sequentially, a sign that markets are benefiting from policy support. The People's Bank of China recently launched a carbon emission reduction support tool. As large scale and distributed projects start construction, next year's total pipeline in Chinese market is expected to exceed 100 gigawatts. Looking forward to 2022, market demand in China, US, India, Europe, and Australia will continue its upward trajectory. Module prices remain high, which was accelerated the penetration of products with lower LCOE, and the penetration of the distributed generation business, which is less price sensitive. Our distributed business accounted for approximately 35 to 40% in the third quarter and over 50% in some markets such as Australia, Japan, and Brazil. Clients have been favorable towards our premium quality product, such as Tiger Pro and a 2mm product, which were specifically designed for residential C&I distributed generation facilities. Meanwhile, our global brand awareness and the global marketing team strengthened the market competitiveness for our BIPV products. We have recently won the bid for the new Dubai Electricity Water Authority's headquarter building projects, which will become the world's largest and tallest single building equipped with BIPV system. The BIPV system used advanced N-type cell technology and modules with a transparency range between 3% and 16%, and can provide a power output of 500 watt to 708 watt. As one of the directions of our core developments, the proportion of shipments in the distributed generation market will further increase next year. Shipments of Tiger Pro products that can bring lower LCOE accounted for nearly 50% in the third quarter and are expected to exceed 70% in the fourth quarter. In 2022, we will optimize and match the capacity advantage of Tiger Pro and Tiger Neo products, solidifying our leading position in high-efficiency products. In terms of contract performance and pricing, in the face of uncontrollable factors such as the severe volatility in upstream raw material prices, energy quota, and carbon emission control, we have established a market forecast and short-term dynamic review mechanism. For newly signed orders, we are securing materials in advance and introducing a floating price clause in contracts. In order to avoid negative impact of market volatility to some extent. In short, we are very optimistic about the market demand. Short-term problems such as raw material supply, logistics, etc. are gradually being solved through remitting efforts. We focus on winning the market with the best products and services. With that, I will turn it over to Pat.
Thank you, Jenna. Let me go into more details about this quarter now. Total revenue was $1.33 billion, an increase of 8.1% sequentially, mainly benefiting from substantial growth in module shipment. Gross margin was 15.1% compared with 17.1% in the second quarter this year. Total operating expenses in the third quarter was $184 million, an increase of 18.2% sequentially. The sequential increase was mainly attributed to an increase in selling and marketing expenses due to rising shipping costs under a tight global logistic market. We remained flexible and adjusted both domestic and overseas shipments, mitigating the negative impact on profitability from volatile shipping costs by establishing long-term shipping agreements with logistic companies. Total operating expenses accounted for 13.8% of total revenues in the third quarter this year. Excluding impacts from shipping costs, the ratio of operating expenses was stable compared with the second quarter this year. EBITDA was $89 million compared with $143 million in the second quarter of 2021. Taking into consideration the significant increase in benefits from change of fair value due to a decrease in the company's stock price in the third quarter this year, net income was $30.1 million, a significant increase both sequentially and year-over-year. Non-GAAP net income was $2.5 million, and diluted earnings per ADS was 5 cents. Net foreign exchange loss, including change in fair value of foreign exchange derivative, was approximately $1 million, a significant decrease from a net exchange loss of $9.4 million in the third quarter of last year, and flat sequentially. We will continue to optimize our hedging against foreign exchange risks to reduce the impact of foreign exchange volatility on our operating results. Moving to the balance sheet. At the end of the third quarter, our balance of cash and cash equivalents was $1.1 billion, which improved from the second quarter. Accounts receivable due from third parties was flat sequentially, and AR turnover days were 65 days compared with 62 days in the second quarter this year. as shipments to the U.S. and global transportation routes were hampered by disruptions. Inventory turnover days was 171 days compared with 138 days in the second quarter of 2021. Total debt was $3.69 billion at the end of the third quarter, compared to $3.12 billion at the end of the second quarter this year. Out of the total debt, $68 million was related to international solar projects. Net debt was $2.5 billion compared with $2.1 billion at the end of the second quarter this year. This concludes our prepared remarks. We are now happy to take your questions. Operator, please proceed.
Thank you. Audio participants with questions to pose, please press 01 on your telephone keypad and you'll be placed in the queue. To cancel the queue, please press 02. Once again, 01 or telephone keypad now. First, we have Philip from Ralph Capital Partners. Your question, please.
Hi, everybody. Thank you for taking my questions. The first one is on your Vietnamese wafer capacity that you're bringing online. So 7 gigawatts by Q1, and with that, you'll use German poly, I believe. When would you expect shipment volumes or shipments to hit the U.S. That are using, you know, either German poly or perhaps even U.S. poly, and then the Vietnamese wafers, and then Southeast Asia cell and module? Could we see the volumes to the U.S. start to restart in Q2, and then how many gigawatts do you expect to ship into the U.S. in 2022 as a result of this new supply chain? Thanks.
Thank you, Phil. A great question. I think we have made a very strategic move to establish our Venice wafer factory together to secure a long-term contract with multiple, let's say, non-China polysilicon suppliers. Based on the current schedules, we will start to ramp up our Vietnam wafer factories by early Q1, let's say January, February. And we are expecting a full value chain established outside China will start to fully utilize by end of Q1. So ideally, the products start to arrive in U.S. market by late first half, let's say May or June, and massive volume will be definitely in second half. So total volume-wise, we are looking to around production numbers. We're looking at around 5 gigawatt of production, and considering the uncertainty of logistics, we are not 100% sure how many of them will arrive at the U.S.
Great. Thank you, Jenner, for the detail. And then when you think about the anti-circumvention risk, you know, we saw the current case go away. But I think the petitioners through their law firm and Tim Brightbill were talking about, you know, potential other cases. Do you have a view on what those cases could be and how they could impact this capacity? Or, what's your view in general about that? Thanks.
Thank you. I think this, let's call it trade wars, won't stop. That's our long-term view. That's why we have made the decision to establish a fully vertical integrated value chain for capacities in both Vietnam, Malaysia, including U.S. So that should be our ultimate solution to solve all those potential trade issues. And at least that's the best solution we have right now. In long term, really, we don't have a crystal ball to see it, but we are expecting, you know, the solution Jinko can bring to the market should be the most one of the most reliable ones.
Right. Okay. Thank you. And then another one here on the Section 201. We recently saw a surprise exemption reinstated for facial modules in the U.S., which means I think the modules can come in tariff-free. And then also, there might be substantial refunds for modules that have been already shipped in. So I was wondering if you might be able to quantify what the Section 201 refunds could be, the timing of it. Have you received any thus far, for example? And then what, you know, if this decision gets reversed yet again, you know, what would the process be to perhaps return that money to the U.S. government? Have you thought through the longer-term picture for the Section 201 bifacial situation? Thanks.
Thank you, Phil. I think from the cash flow-wise, we are not expecting to receive any refund in any short term. We have your report about the uncertainty of the potential appeal from the government side. We believe that's highly possible, and that's why we still put a question mark there. We do not expect such kind of lawsuit will reach an end pretty soon. So, but if we can get some potential refund, that definitely that will be a very positive for the company. But we have to wait for quite a while to see the final result. So we will wait and see. We haven't planned it in our cash flow yet.
Okay, thank you. One last one, I'll pass it on. As it relates to the margin, you gave us, I think, some capacity numbers for 2022. Maybe can you talk about how you see margins trending in 22, especially if you know the assumptions that you make now kind of persist? Do you think margin expansion is potentially available, especially with flexible pricing based on input costs as we get through 22? Thanks.
This is Charlie, and looking to next year, 2022, I think we are more confident the margin will be, be improved year over year. And this year is very special and a challenge, particularly, the supply chain shortage and high input cost, including the logistic issues as well. And looking to next year, we think the supply chain will get more friendly and compared to this year. And on top of that, we will, increase our production, integration level, and we are expanding the N-type, the cell capacities. And next year, we roughly we estimate the capacity will reach to a wafer 48 gigawatts, cell 40 gigawatts, and module 50 gigawatts, roughly 80% integration level. And we are expecting we can get the net income contributions from the N-type, and because we are more confident and we have the advantage of this next generation technology in terms of the production level and the cost advantage, which is the product is very popular in the market, and we can get the price premium.
Great. Okay. Thank you, Charlie, Jenner, and Mr. Lee. I'll pass it on.
Thank you, Philip. Next, we have Gary from Credit Suisse. Your question, please.
Yeah, thank you, management, for taking my questions. I have so my first question is, can management elaborate a little bit more on our upcoming the N-type cell capacity? So I think we are relatively kind of early in terms of the relatively large scale kind of N-type capacity. So can management maybe share with us more on your expected cost competitiveness of this new capacity, and how do we think of the kind of a two technology trends, the TOPCon and the HJT. Thank you.
Hey, Gary, this is Charlie, and we are investing 16 gigawatts N-type TOPCon capacities, and we have the 2 years experience in running roughly 900 megawatts capacities in our factories. And now, you know, the production, let's say, metrics and the cost advantage versus the perk. And, you know, we are more worried, you know, in the, I think, the leading the industries. And for next year, when we ramp up, we expect to ramp up the capacity in the first quarter, and I think in the full operations roughly in the second quarter. And in terms of the you know, integrated production cost for the N-type versus the PERC, for the medium term, we expect the cost will, you know, the difference versus the PERC is very small, even the same. And more important, you know, if we look at the conversion efficiencies, the N-type versus as well as the, you know, electricity, additional electricity generations to our customers, and we believe it's a very good leading market product, and we can get the, you know, the price premium and get more perfect contributions for this product.
Yeah, okay, thank you. My second question is on the module shipment. So I think some of our peers are relatively cautious on the 4Q kind of demand, but I think our guidance still suggests a meaningful kind of a Q-on-Q shipment increase. So just wonder if management can share more on the, how can we achieve this kind of a kind of still very strong Q-on-Q increase.
Mm-hmm. Thank you for your question, Gary. This is Jim. I think quarter over quarter, we have a pretty strong Q4 shipment expectations. Mainly it's driven by combined demand from China and the non-China market. And I think after the relatively weak quarterly shipment in the first three quarters of 2021, I think most of our customers, let's say non-Chinese market customers, are gradually accepting the market balance of this new prices, and they are trying to, you know, take the time, try to close the project, close their pipeline. And for China demand, everybody knows, you know, there are quite a strong demand in China in the last two months time. So we successfully, you know, secure quite a significant volumes, and to supply a pretty strategic projects across China market. So combine those two factors together, I think we can achieve a pretty strong shipment in Q4.
Okay, yeah, thank you very much. So my last question, and I'll pass on, is on the whether can management share with us the latest update of our subsidiary Asia listing?
You know, for the IPO process, you know, for the, our subsidiaries, and we are, you know, on the track and to get the public, get the IPO done. And by the end of September, we got approval from the Shanghai Stock Exchange. Now we are in the process in the registrations with Chinese securities regulators. And we expect to roughly in the next 1 and 2 months, we can, you know, to get the, everything ready and to get the, you know, IPO done.
Okay, yeah, that's all my questions.
So
thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Gary. Audio participants with questions to pose, please press 01 or telephone keypad and you'll be joined in the queue. Next, we have Rajiv from Samsara Capital. Your question, please.
Yes, good morning and good evening to you. My first question is about the potential shipments that were lost because of logistics issues in the third quarter. and might be lost in the fourth quarter as well. Could you help us, give us a sense of how much in terms of megawatts you might have lost in terms of shipments not happening because of logistics in Q3, and what that impact might be in Q4? And also help us understand if this lost shipments, is that a temporary timing thing where the shipments get pushed out into 2022? Or this market opportunity was is lost for forever.
Thank you. I think let me take your first question. And in terms of quantifies of the delays, I think it's we're looking at let's say 100 megawatt level of delays. I think the delay between Q3 and Q4. It's not because we haven't shipped or we haven't produced the module, or it's the customer doesn't want the module. It's because of the logistic delay. You know, there's a lot of traffic jams across the ports, like say in Europe or in US. So, you know, accounting-wise, we cannot recognize those modules until we deliver the module into our customer's site or in their warehouse. That's why we have to delay the revenue recognition, I think, from partially from Q3 to Q4 by approximately 1 to 200 megawatts, several hundred megawatts. But it's, the module itself has been produced, the contract is solid, and the price has been secured. So we just need to wait until, you know, this logistic bottleneck being gradually solved, and we can recognize revenues in Q4.
And just to follow up on that, in terms of Q4, are you experiencing similar logistic issues or maybe even worse because of fourth quarter Christmas, all the competition you have from the rest of retail? So is the problem for the fourth quarter shipments even worse?
I don't think so. At least Q4 will be slightly better than Q3. The reason is the China market, domestic market demand is pretty strong. So we can divert the risk, you know, not only rely on the shipping line companies. We can recognize more revenue in domestic market. So that's one of the positive side. And also, you know, after, you know, this port issues across the Europe or U.S., you know, the government side has taken many actions to push for the port itself to speed up the loading speed or unloading speed to make sure, you know, everything can go faster. So we have seen this improvement from the logistics side as well. So combine those two, we believe the situation will be much, much improved compared with Q3.
Okay. My next question is about the average selling prices. You mentioned that there was a small increase in the selling price, but obviously it did not offset the increases in material costs. Could you talk about to what extent your shipments in the third quarter were still subject to long-term contracts where you had to honor pricing that was negotiated some time back, or close to pricing that was negotiated some time back, versus pricing that is versus modules that are shipping into prices that are you know, currently available in the spot market?
Thank you. I think from contract execution wise, we have to find a mutual solution together with our customers. So we, since it's a signed contract, we cannot expect our customers to swallow all this potential increase because of raw materials. We have to find a mutual solutions together. So there are quite several different kind of solutions we can reach agreement with customers. And so I won't spend too much time to illustrate everything. But at the end of the day, I think over 75% of our contract delivered or executed in Q3 are, you know, the old time heritage. So, and also, you know, we have to find lots of solutions combined with short-term and long-term solutions together with our customers to find a win-win solution for long run, because we are not doing business in spot market. We are doing business in power sector, which needs very long-term sustainability and a win-win solution with the customers for long-term. There will always be market up and down. We cannot just ruin the customer relationship because one-time issues.
Right. So, Jinnah, just so I understand, you mentioned that 75% of shipments were into long-term contracts, and these long-term contracts have been somewhat modified to reflect the realities of the cost pressures. Can you give us a sense of what percent of 20, going into 2022, you know, and learning from the experience of these higher prices that we are now having to live with, a higher cost of materials that we are having to live with, what percentage of shipments might be, you know, if you do 30 to 35 or 32 to 36 gigawatts next year, what percentage would be long-term contracts that have already been signed? Or are there flexibility or versus contracts where pricing has not yet been determined?
So we have approximately 25 to 30% of order book being signed or committed to the customer end for the 2022. Some of the contract is based on the secure the price and terms. Some of the contract is just a framework contract, which means we keep the commercial part flexible up to the market. We also have some of the framework contract which has an index-based pricing mechanism, which allows both our end and our customer ends to have a flexibility when the market goes up and down. So basically, we have learned a lot of lessons from 2021, and we carried on, and we established some new business model with our customer end for 22 and longer term.
So what you're saying is that that the framework agreements will give you more flexibility on pricing if the cost of materials moves in or shipment cost moves in an unfavorable way. Is that also the reason why you are confident that the gross margin next year should improve, because you are embedding a higher gross margin than was achieved in 2021?
Well, the gross margin will be a separate topic. I think the gross margin improvement mainly comes from a much improved vertical integrated capacity expansion by end of this year, so which will contribute a lot of margin improvement. Another important factor will be our new product, Tigo New product, will contribute a lot of premium because of the nice parameters and extra power output such product can generate. And the third one will be our portion of we say large dimension products. For example, you know, our 182 millimeter product portion increased from first half around 20 to 25% to end of this year around 60 to 70%, and to next year it might go even higher. So which give us a very good competitive edge. So hope that answers your question.
Yes. Yes. Thank you. And one last question for Charlie. Charlie, the general and administrative expenses have been much higher this year than last year in the first three quarters and first two quarters. They went up quite substantially in the third quarter as well. Can you give us some sense of why that increase is happening? And in particular, how much of this increase in costs is related directly to the IPO in China?
Thanks for your questions. And I think, you know, the operating expenses is relatively high. It's contributed by, I think, firstly, the shipping cost. The shipping cost is, you know, is pretty high, and we have very high exposures to you know, shipments out of China. And second one is the IPO cost. IPO cost, I don't believe it's very significant. Roughly maybe $2 million for the third quarter. And on top of that, I think third quarter we our shipment is not so big, you know, relatively. And by the fourth quarter, we have you know, very big jump, you know, on the shipments, which will, you know, dilute the operating costs. And excluding the, I think excluding the, let's say the variable costs, particularly the shipping costs, the warranty cost, and the fixed cost for operating expenses is fixed as and relatively stable.
Actually, Charlie, I'm sorry, I missed something that you said about what amount the IPO costs were. But the question that I'm trying to grapple with is, you know, the G&A, which normally should not increase that much. You know, last year it was running at around $50 million a quarter. This year it started at around $55 to $60 million, and it was almost $70 million in the third quarter. So that's a pretty substantial increase. Can you tell us what is driving this increase and what we should expect for Q4?
So the G&A cost is, you know, an administrative cost. I think it should be stable. You know, looking for the future, it should be stable. And it could, we have some, you know, IPO costs, and we have some, I think, the quarter adjustment for the, let's say, the provision for the accounts receivable. And excluding that, I think it's relatively stable.
Okay. Thank you.
Welcome.
Thank you. Audio participants with questions to pose, please press 01 or telephone keypad and you'll be placed in the queue. Next, we have Alan from Jefferies. Your question, please.
Thanks a lot for the operator for having the questions, and thanks a lot for management. My first question is about, just to check, because the inventory has increased by quite significantly, so just to check, is this tied to the shipment in the sea to overseas market?
So I think two aspects. One is, you know, the inventory is on transit to overseas market, and challenged by the logistic, you know, and the delay. The second one is we are expecting, you know, back to third quarter, the material cost is still on the, you know, upside. So we intentionally, you know, put more resources and get more materials to make sure we have relatively advantage to for the productions in the fourth quarter.
Understood. Thanks a lot. And so when come to the fourth quarter, I've noticed that the company was guiding for 12 to 15% on gross margin over the last three quarters, but the guidance has increased from 12 to 15 to 13 to 16, while the upstream policy cost has increased a lot. So first of all, would like to learn from the management, is it because of the increase in percentage of large size module and a cost cutting effort so that the company is confident to make a probably higher margin even when upstream poly cost is higher?
It's a combination. One is, you know, you are talking about the large size percentage, and we, you know, our capacity is really 7 gigawatts. We talked in the press release. Second one is percentage, and third quarter one, you know, the large size 182, and roughly 50%, and the fourth quarter may reach to 70%. And on top of that, you know, we are expecting the our ASP, you know, ASP, you know, will continue to increase. I think, particularly because we have shipments, more shipments in China, and China ASP is the spot market, and the price is pretty high, and the Q4 versus the Q3, the ASP, you know, has, I think, you know, increased, you know, it's a roughly 1 cent to 2 cents per watt.
Understood. I guess, okay, thanks a lot. So it's a combination of these factors. And on the N-type new generation cells, so I suspect the company is using the TOPCon technology and would wonder if the yield rate is it able to disclose the yield rate of the production line, because it was a concern on the yield rate, because TOPCon has more production steps.
We are reaching for N-type TOPCon. We are reaching almost 99%. So I think that's a leading number in this industry. That's why we have our confidence to expand our capacity to such you know, sizable volume to make to extend our competitive advantage as well.
Understood. That's very impressive. I think it's one of the leading indicator in the market. Thanks a lot, management.
No problem.
Thank you, Alan. Next, we will be taking one last question from Brian Lee from Goldman Sachs. Your question, please.
Hey, guys. Good evening. Thanks for squeezing me in here. I might have missed this, or maybe I'm misinterpreting something, but could you help reconcile? I think you mentioned 100 to 200 megawatts kind of revenue recognition issue Q3 to Q4, but the actual shipment guidance is changing by, you know, 2+ gigawatts versus what you had previously. So is that being pushed even further into the early part of 2022, or what's the, I guess, the disconnect between the 100 to 200 megawatts you're calling out specifically 3Q to 4Q and the bigger kind of shipment guidance change that's happening here for the full year?
Yeah, sure. I think my previous answers is between this delays between revenue recognition delays from Q3 to Q4. It should be like let's say somewhere around 200 megawatt level. So, and the delay will continue, but I think the improvement is definitely be better than Q3 because we have seen this traffic jam across all the main ports is improving day over day, week over week. So that's why I'm saying, you know, the shipment and together with we are shipping more into China market in Q4. So that's why we don't have to suffer the logistic problems from the shipping line. So those are the two factors why we say the revenue recognition in Q4, the pressure will be lighter or, you know, easier than Q3. So regarding the guidance change, I think it's mainly because we have some delays of one of our workshops, cell workshops. So that give us a kind of ceilings for this capacity expansion, so that's why we naturally, adjusted our guidance accordingly.
Okay, that's helpful. And so, just to be clear, you haven't seen any cancellations of shipment schedules, whether for this year or into next year. Just things are changing on the schedule, but you haven't seen anything canceled outright.
We have seen pretty, several cases canceled by the shipping line companies, but we always can find some solutions because, you know, we have this multi-year shipping line contract with all the major shipping lines. So, even they canceled, you know, the shipments or the shipping lines this week or next week, we can always try to find out the solution to squeeze them in for the next one in the, I don't know, next month or the month after, right?
Okay, fair enough. And then maybe just two last ones for me, and I'll pass it on. Are you reiterating your CapEx guidance for 2021? I think you had said $1.1 billion US before, and then any early thoughts on capacity increase and CapEx for 2022?
Yeah, thank you. This is Pan. And for the CapEx side, we expect that in Q4, we'll have a 400 million expectation. So the total CapEx in this year will be 1.2 billion. And the next year will remain the same 1.2 billion for 2022.
Okay, so flat CapEx year on year. Any thoughts around the funding for $1.2 billion of CapEx in 2022?
No, we are, you know, our subsidiary is in the China IPO process, and we're expecting to raise at least 6 billion RMB. So that is the most, you know, the most reliable, you know, the majority part. Upon that, we will make it some, you know, debt financing as well.
Okay, understood. Thanks, guys. I'll pass it on. Appreciate the time.
Thank you, Brian. I will now hand the session back to you. Please go ahead, Ms. Ripple. Ms. Ripple,
yes.
Please go ahead.
And hello. Yes, let's end the call today. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, this concludes today's conference call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.